Yehi ulah atzonim reithi, v'higyon libi lefanecha Adonai tzuri v'goali. May the words of my mouth and thoughts of my heart be acceptable before you, Hashem, my rock and my redeemer. Shalom all and welcome to our Kosher Torah Open Forums. I am, of course, your host, Ariel Bar Tzedok. We are presently in a series based upon an old 16th century text of the classical Kabbalah. It's the pre-Laurianic Kabbalah, written by Rabbi Yosef Menachem out of Egypt, 1500s again. This is a book called Ohel Moed, the Tabernacle of Meeting, I guess as it's called. We are in the third lesson tonight, and the topic in the text speaks about the creation of the world, combination of letters, by the combination of letters, the creation of the world in accordance to the order of letters. Then it speaks about the manifestation or the bringing into being light. And then a very interesting explanation of an ancient legend about the lessening of the light of the moon. Boy, I feel like a little kid here who has bitten off more than I can chew. Or in other words, I hope I can discuss everything that I want to tonight. Now, to set things in the proper place, I want to share with you a little personal insight. In my many years as being a Rav, and I've been a Rav now for 30 years, boy oh boy, time flies when we're having fun. Just for the record, my criteria of using the term Rav is as I've learned it to be. It is specifically used and deserved by those who have tested on the code of Jewish law. There are two levels of rabbi, yore, yore, yadin, yadin, based upon what levels of the Shulchan Aruch one has studied. Well, that's how I got my ordination 30 years ago, and I hear all kinds of other ordinations that people have today to call themselves Rabbi Rob and whatever. Frankly, I do not respect or accept it, but everyone else does. I'm not interested in titles. I'm not interested in competition and garbage about this and that. That's why you will see at koshertorah.com, I don't bother using my title. Because if I have anything to share with you, it's not going to be based upon a piece of paper which claims credentials. It's going to be based upon my experience, my abilities, and the value of that which I provide. If that's of value to you, then that's good. And if it's not, then what good is all the paperwork and everything else and all the fancy titles before and after a name? That's my position. And now, as we're going to discuss creation, I'm going to introduce to you some topics tonight which are the absolute foundations, fundamentals of our holy Torah, the absolute foundations and fundamentals of life, the universe, and everything. And though I'm making a funny reference to the late author Douglas Adams, author of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, many of you might not be familiar with him. In his books, he created this supercomputer who for 10 million years contemplated the meaning of life, the universe, and everything. And after 10 million years, concluded that the meaning of life, the universe, and everything is 42. Needless to say, I'm sure Mr. Adams meant that as a joke. But the number 42 actually has significance in the Judaic tradition, specifically with the relationship to creation. No, it is not the topic of our discussion this evening. But it is a topic I do discuss in my Jewish Magical Traditions Semester 3 with this discussion of the secrets of the 42, in quote, names of God. But names. Names are made out of letters. Combinations of letters are what the topic of tonight's discussion is. We all know from the Bible that it says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And how did he create? He spoke. Let there be, and there was. What did God speak? Well, words. What are words made up of? Letters. What are letters? Sounds. Now, anybody knows anything about the physics of sound harmonics knows sound only exists within the relationship of a world of mass or matter. But I'm not going to get into that right now. because those of you who are familiar with the Lurianic system, the RE, he refers to something unique called Tanta. And I discussed this in the Otsarot Hayim series of the RE. Ta'amim, Nikudot, Tagin, Otiyot. Cantillation chants, the vowels, which are just basic tonals, A, E, I, O, U. Tagin, which are like crowns upon the letters, and then the letters themselves. And they correlate in the RE's system to different levels and dimensions of reality and what I refer to as consciousness. Everything, the secret of life, is consciousness. And now, before I get into this material, I want to share with you a secret of the B'nai Nevi'im, the children of the prophets. As you know, koshertorah.com, I thank God, I've been honored for the 20 years that I've ran this yeshiva and 15 or more years that we've ran this website to teach different systems of bonding with God, that which we call meditative instruction. But the major hindrance, roadblock that people face in meditative practice is their intellectualization of the process and to try to run it through the mind. This is an overwhelming stumbling block. It is insurmountable. Anyone who tries to progress through the mind will forever be limited by the limitations of the mind. It is not the way. In modern Kabbalah, we have a lot of things that are based upon Greek foundations. I have endeavored here at koshertorah.com to distinguish between the original Hebraic sources and the later Greek sources. We've been doing that in this series in Ohel Moed, and I do it in many other sources as well. Courses, I should say, classes. And we're going to do that right now. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to be able to read Scripture and see that God always places emphasis on what we call the heart. The heart was always called the place of understanding, never the head. Essentially, the meditative path is exclusively, and I emphasize that word exclusively, accessed by what we call the heart. Not just emotions, not just feelings, but a combination of them. It's a raw, gut, passionate, anti-intellectual experience. The B'nai Nevi'im, the children of the prophets in biblical times, from Abraham through Zechariah, were passionate individuals. They did not stop to think, but they never ceased to feel. And in order to get into the mood of prophecy, they would dance, they would move, and they would sway until ultimately their hearts and their passions took over, enabling them to travel in mind, but not intellect, to different domains, realities, and experiences to see beyond the limitations of the human mind and flesh. This is the secret of all meditation. So those of you who pursue the intellectual path, I'm trying to understand it, you're already on the wrong path. Nowhere does this foundational message come into play than with the system that we're going to discuss tonight about the usage of the combinations of Hebrew letters. Permutations is a rather mathematical thing. The structure and concept of these things you will find clearly in Greek mystery, mathematical schools like Pythagoras and the like. You will find the usage of magical squares and other things, very predominant in later Jewish magical literature, having its source in ancient Judaic teachings, which correlated to many of the old ancient teachings of many cultures, in the mystery of numbers. You see, the ancients were all students of what I guess we will today call science. The Hartumim, who we call the magicians in ancient Egypt, who stood with Pharaoh, they were pretty smart guys. Moses certainly grew up with them. And Moses learned many a thing. Abraham, hundreds of years before, was also a master of what was the science known in those days. And the source of those sciences were said to be from those who were called messengers from heaven. Angels, in other words. Yes, much of these teachings came from off-world to guide, direct, educate us. Now, you must understand something about off-world entities, a point that's going to be made very clear in this material once I get to it. A major distinction must be made here between the popular view and the ancient view with regards to these angelic entities. There are numerous different races thereof. Most of the philosophical school, embraced, of course, by Maimonides and those of his orientation, is that these, in quote, spiritual entities are nothing other than non-corporeal, completely matterless, non-physical entities. The original teachings disagreed with that sharply, and indeed referred to many classes of angels as having form and matter, even though not necessarily that which we may understand and know. Maybe that is what science today refers to as dark matter. I don't know. I don't know if anyone can define within the context of modern science until such a time when we have more information. But the point is, the knowledge, the information that we received from off-world, which includes our holy Torah. Remember, Torah's not from the earth. Moses didn't invent the Torah. Torah came from God. Yeah, we all know that. But read your ancient stories carefully. The Torah was passed on to Moses in heaven by others. Go look at it carefully. Moses went up to heaven, it says. Very interesting, curious references. And he learned from a master who taught him. Revealed his name many a time. Oh, what the heck. Zagnazgakel. He is one of the agents of Metatron. You learn his name in Targum Yonatan on the Torah. Everyone, everything is passed down to us in a form, context, and a construct that we can understand. But we must understand the limitations of those forms. And as long as we allow the intellect to dominate, we are symbolically under the influence of the golden calf, and therefore completely and always subject to its curse. Passion. Heart. Above and beyond the limitations of intellect and philosophy, to feel, to know. And if you don't, then you're not connected. Now let's turn to creation, because with this understanding, let us apply this material. Our text reads, Da, know, Da lecha achish melecha el, know then, my brother, may God protect you. Koldim kol davar shebara kadosh baruch hu, everything before God created anything, chideshu bara haotiot. He revealed and created the letters. Letters are forms, structures. Call them, if you will, by our understanding today, the laws of nature, natural law, and with the permutation of these letters did he create the world. And as our text will say, no, that when you add an aleph with a bet, you get av, father. Bet with nun, you get ben, son. Bet with kof and resh, you get keber, which means grave. You take the bet and you put it between the shin and the tav, and you get Shabbat. Meaning that with the combination of the letters he created the world. And this includes, of course, mankind, father and son. And this is how it was with all things. And in the end of all things, the soul is going to request the grave so it can have the rest of the afterlife, so it can rise to what he calls here the attribute of Shabbat, the source where all the souls come from, that eventually, God be willing, we will inherit. And he goes into some other things here, but my point is, on this way of the permutation of letters is all things made. And that's what he wanted to say. Now I have to teach you something about this. First, it's a very interesting teaching that the Baal Shem Tov brings down in Sefer Baal Shem Tov in the end of the book called the Parsha Vezelcha Beracha, that in the beginning, our Holy Torah was just a combination of letters without form, without structure, no books, no parshiot, no sentences, no words. And as a reality structured itself in this world, so then did a group of letters come together to form the words, the sentences, the sections, the books. Quantum reality in practice. Everything existed in a potential, and only later then became actual. That is the secret here. You see, combinations of letters are an infinite number. You can combine any amount with any amount and any amount in any which way to come with any and many different combinations. And now I ask you, how did things come to be as they are? I want to digress for a moment to share with you something very interesting that I learned just today. As I was homeschooling my child today, 7th grade, we're learning science, and it was talking about the creation of life. And as we were discussing the modern scientific, they call it hypothesis and theory, but they always make that so unemphasized, as if to say, this is reality what happened. That in the early Earth, there were these combinations of gases, chemicals, and lightning strikes, and that with this combination, the lightning hit the gases, which caused a chemical reaction, which created some type of a structure which could eventually lead to a protein. And scientists created in a laboratory what they think was the atmosphere of ancient Earth from 3.5 billion years ago. They electrified it and they created something which could become carbohydrates, nucleic acid, and the like. And, of course, this proves that life came from non-life, and that something came from nothing. In spite of the fact that that contradicts modern science, wherein which they've known that spontaneous life is not real. Louis Pasteur, of all people, proved that to be true, amongst others. But now, science today, in its atheistic religious zeal, states that these basic subcombinations then created cells, which created everything that we have today over millions and billions of years. Really, let me give you a comparison. Let's say I go into my kitchen and I take some milk and some vinegar and I mix it up. I can create a rudimentary form, a of plastic. Now, any of you scientists are out there, you can help me with this one. How long will I have to keep that plastic in my kitchen until such a time that it will solidify into a solid form, diversify into multiple colors, form itself into little Lego-sized building blocks of all different colors, and then build a Lego castle of 50 to 100 trillion blocks big? How long am I going to have to wait in my kitchen for that little combination that I made for that to happen arbitrarily on its own? Yeah. Okay. That's what modern science is saying. Oh, it just happened? Oh, we know it did. How do you know it did? But because we know there can't be a God, then because we know there can't be a God, it has to have happened. You see that reverse logic? The concept of spontaneous generation of life contradicts the laws of known science, and yet they proclaim it because of their absolute refusal to claim something else. And I am getting at something intentional here. Because we want to speak of letters, permutations. Many people make the mistake of thinking, well, when I combine all the letters as the Sefer Yetzirah teaches us to do, I guess I should just combine every letter with every other letter. And whatever comes out, comes out. That's going to take you a really long time. And it's not worth it. I've emphasized here at the beginning of this lesson the importance of following your feelings, your guts. My gut tells me which letters perform which with other letters. In what way, how, when, fast, slow, right, left, up, down. What? I don't put any pattern to it. I just let it flow out of me. I have learned this lesson from experience to let go of my mind and recognize that anyone else who doesn't do this is a prisoner. And that is a terrible state to be. The Arizal speaks about this. Rabbi Vital speaks about this. What then is the secret of the universe? How did everything come about? You don't think science knows, eh? I want to share with you something. You can go and do your own research into this. But I'm going to introduce you to a topic tonight called biocentrism. It is a concept of the biocentric universe proposed in 2007 by a doctor of medicine, American doctor of medicine, by the name of Dr. Robert Lanza. In his view, life and biology are central to being and reality in the cosmos. Life creates the universe rather than the other way around. Biocentrism asserts current theories of the physical world do not work, and they can never be made to work until they fully account for life and consciousness. Okay? Oh, you don't realize how much this has opened up a can of worms and anger amongst all the physicists. Physics is considered the fundamental study for the universe. Chemistry, the fundamental study of life. Biocentrism tries to place biology before the other sciences to produce a theory of everything. And as I said, science hates this. But there was a certain professor of physics and astronomy at Johns Hopkins University, Professor Richard Cohn Henry. And he says something very interesting about Dr. Lanza's theory. He says, what Lanza says in his book, which is called Biocentrism, it's available online, he says it's nothing new. And he says, so why does he have to say it at all? He says, because we, the physicists, do not say it. And if we did, we only whisper it, and even then, in private, furiously blushing as we mouth out the words. True, yes. Politically correct, hell no. And it's because there is an almost religious zeal of atheism. The truth and reality is blurred from the eye. How did the letters combine? How did the forces of nature come to be? Recently, Professor Stephen Hawking came out and says, we don't need a God to create the universe because the laws of nature created the universe. Simply because the laws of nature, there they were, and they all combined together, and here we are. And therefore, it wasn't a God needed. Of course, Professor Hawking's position is as, unfortunately, unhealthy as his body. What do you mean they were just there? Oh, yeah, they just came there. Where? Oh, blah, 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 blah. No one has any answer. No one wants to say. But just like if I wanted to build a Lego structure of 100 trillion Lego blocks, something tells me there has to be an intelligence behind it. So it is with creation. That intelligence is consciousness. Life, consciousness are one and the same. That ultimate consciousness, ultimate life is God. And the structure of the expression of that life and consciousness are what we symbolically call the letters of the Torah. Symbolically. And as a reality structured itself here by the choice of life, consciousness, and man, so the letters formed the structure that they do now. Anyone who knows when you observe something, quantum reality, things take the structure that they do based upon the eye of the observer. As our eye expands, the glue that holds the letters of the Torah in its present prison will be unleashed. And the Torah will then be able to take its fluid form as it was. This is called the Torah of the Messiah, where in which humanity will again be able to see what's symbolically referred to from one end of the universe to the other. All potential, all actuality, everything. And the Torah will begin with Aleph and end with a Tav. And then it will begin with a Tav and end with an Aleph. And then it will begin with a Bet and end with an Aleph, and on, and all the different possible combinations existing simultaneously. This reality still exists today. You might have heard a famous saying that there are 70 faces to the Torah, meaning 70 traditional ways to interpret the Torah. 70, of course, is a metaphorical number. You'll find later commentators who will say there are 600,000 basic ways of understanding the Torah. Why 600,000? Because that's the symbolic number of the souls of Israel. That each and every soul has their unique perspective. And anybody who's in the rabbinic world, who's ever been to a Hebrew bookstore and sees the overwhelming number of books, literature on every single topic imaginable, every single opinion and view imaginable, on everything, you understand what I'm saying. The letters, then. How many letters are there? We say there are 22, but no, there are not. There are at least a minimum of 44. Black fire on white fire. I've written about that on Kosher Torah. Go look it up there. And we can argue and play number games and at least make it 45 to include one for the whole, and therefore the numerical value of man. There is no number. The number is only within a structure in the context of our present reality. When we contemplate the letters, not as the structure of their present form, as many later Kabbalists do, that's their philosophical thing, and they come up with very nice philosophical insights. No. When you go to a letter, sound it out. Don't worry about what it looks like. You can visualize its form. But a secret I revealed long ago in my first book, Call Upon My Name. I'll tell you again now. Talk to the letters. When you want to visualize God's name, go up to the letter Yud. Introduce yourself. Talk to it. Make believe that it's talking back. Have an experience of what in psychology we call active imagination. I assure you, it'll take on a life of its own. And the Yud, or the He, or any other, and every other letter will talk back to you. If only you allow it to. If you don't hold it back with your mind, your rationalizations, your thoughts that say, ah, this is irrelevant, this is irrational, oh, I'm making this up, blah, blah. Shut up. You need a good whack in the head. You need to put on some passionate music. Lighten up. Continuing, the text writes, ומן האותיות גם כן נברא תחילת החידוש והתנועה, שם א' ב' ג' כמו שפרש, בעל ספר קינת אגו. It says, and also the letters, they are also the beginning of all revelations and movement, which is the levels of Aleph and Bet and Gimel. He states here how the letter Aleph is the beginning of the letters, and it teaches about the complete unity, the primordial unity, where in which everything was in the absolute state of unity. Aleph then, he says, represents the revelation of that which we call Surah. Now in the old material, there is that which we call Surah and Homer. Force and form. Even though Surah would probably be image. I use the word force. Yeah, it comes out of Star Wars, but it helps you to understand. That's why I use it. There is the energy, and then there is the form. Call it body and soul, if you will. These exist in simultaneous universes, one within the other. This is what's referred to in Genesis as the heavens and the earth. They exist together, body and soul, visible, invisible. I don't like to use words like physical and metaphysical, or natural and supernatural, because they're really one and the same. They work together. The Aleph speaks of the source. The letter Bet speaks of the distinguish between the two. The source world. First in the mind, last in thought. This is the world of what we call Surah. The potential before the actual. The thought before the deed. And this is made real in the mind of the passionate soul. Because Rabot Machshavot Belevish, as the Pasuk says, many are the thoughts in the mind of man, but it's the counsel of God that shall arise. How? It arises from the heart. Passion, feeling, emotions. We are motivated by how we feel, not just by what we think. And when you're passionate about something, you will create it. This is the secret. The Aleph taps into that source. That's why it's silent. It's image, feeling, passion. Bet. This speaks of two things. The second world, which we call the relationship of Tzura and Homer. Force and form. Shehu olam ha-malachim ve-ha-galgalim. This is what I was telling you earlier. This is the realm of the angels and what we call the spheres. The spheres are the domain of the planets. Okay? One above the other. One within the other. You read literature, and I've published this in other places. There is an intimate relationship between what we call angels and planets. And in my e-book on UFOs and Aliens in Light of Torah, I documented all this from Nachmanides, amongst others. But the Ohel Moed here says something very clear. Pay attention. This relationship of angels to the physical, the Tzura and Homer, he says this. This is the opposite of the ideas of the philosophers. And he quotes here Mor Nebuchim of the Rambam. He says there, Habodim bilibam bidimyonam ashekir, who contemplate from their hearts in lying imagination. He says they're full of it. Sheomrim, because they say, Shehamalach hu sechel nivdal, that he's only this detached intelligence without any form, is the intent. Ve'eno homer, and has no form. He's saying that that is not true. Ve'omrim ken gan shebe'atzmut ha'malachim b'rat Hashem et olamo. And there are those others who say that it was through the intermediaryship of the angels that Hashem created the world. Ve'eno ken chalila. We say that, of course, is not true. El shemalachim nivro b'yom sheni. The angels were created on the second day. If you have never read Genesis and the Big Bang by Dr. Gershom Schroeder, I highly encourage you to read it. Great book to show you how the 7 days of creation should be understood from all Jewish, Kabbalistic, and scientific sources as being symbolic references to the evolution of the universe. See, Judaism has no problem with the concept of billions of years of evolution. If God wants to do that, that he did. But to think that everything happened haphazardly by itself, think back to that homemade plastic that's waiting on my kitchen, right? That's waiting to build itself into a 100 trillion block Lego castle, right? Ain't gonna happen anytime soon or ever. Why? Because it just doesn't have what it needs to do that. It needs an intelligence behind it. And so, the entities who were created in the early part of creation, we call the angels of day two, they were very much involved in later things. There's a lot of discussion in the book of Genesis what it means when God said, "Let us create man in our own image." Oh, go look up the commentaries on that one. That gets very interesting. What is the truth? I don't know. God knows. All I can tell you are the opinions of the authors who have written about it. So, moving right along. With regards to the manifestation of light, he calls it Habayat Ha'or, the revelation of light. Light was not created. Doesn't say Yivra Ha'or, it says Yihi Ha'or. We're just going to get to this right now. All right? Quotes here the verses from Psalms and elsewhere that he cloaks himself with light like a garment, that he makes the angels to be his spirits, etc. And says, now, dalacha, no, that kodem kol davar, tava or tchila. Before everything, light came to be. Notice it doesn't say create. It quotes here, Vayomer Elohim yehi or. Elohim says, let there be light. It doesn't say creation or formation or making, right? And it doesn't say afterwards, Vayichen, and then it came to be like it says with everything else in creation. Rather, it says, let there be light, and there was light. Meaning that the light came into being as an expression of God's essence. And this is what came forth as being. What is this light of creation? It is what we call sentient consciousness, the force of life. That which Dr. Lanza is talking about in biocentrism, which maybe he doesn't even know. That is true God. Not these fantasies that we believe that God's a little old man with a white beard sitting on a throne somewhere, and on Rosh Hashanah he's going to have this big heavy book brought before him. He's going to open it up and say, okay, is your name in here? You've been bad. No, no, no. You're going to get coal in your stocking for Hanukkah. Oh, we don't have Hanukkah stockings. I forget. It's such a guyish thing of me. Isn't it terrible? Yeah, okay. If that's the nonsense and silliness that you want to believe, you don't know God, you don't know Torah, I don't know what you know. It's time to wake up. We're out of time. Moving back to our text here. This, he quotes here now in a reference to the Talmud, Tractate Hagigah, that this was the light which is said to be concealed for the righteous in the time to come. What does that mean? That this light on day one that was revealed but not created is life, consciousness, sentience. It is what motivated creation to be. It is what made the letters take the structures and the forms that they do so that creation would come to be. This light is above structure, above form. It is the silent secret of the Aleph. It is thus the source. Don't get all philosophical with me. Oh, it refers to this Sephira and this Olam. Shut up. Feel it. Don't think it. Like Sefer Yetzirah says, silence your mouth. Stop asking questions. Clear your mind. Silence your tongue. And experience that which is Bilima, above, beyond. This is what's referred to as the ultimate individual light. Moving right along. He states here again, etc. and so on. He gets into other things. This is all, he says, references to the different sefirot that came forth, etc. and so on, from the simple light and the mind. And he says, "Ein lacha davar mekol maaseh bereshit she'eno medaber b'tachtonim ha'nevus ha'elyonim." Says everything below correlates to and is a hint to that which is above. As we spoke of Tzora and Chomer, light and vessel, body and soul, everything gives rise to everything else. Within the nature of everything that grows, there is a spark of sentient and consciousness without which it will not live or grow. That is what you must understand. Everything correlates to and reflects everything else. As we say, as it is above, so it is below. So those who truly wish to contemplate the supernal realms, I've always told them, close all of your books, get out of the building of the yeshiva, and go back into God's world. We had some guests over for the Sabbath. One of them was a science teacher. She had a very interesting story that she related how when she was talking to some students in the yeshiva, she was relating to them about the different types of clouds in the sky. And one of the students, maybe more, I don't know, challenged her and said, "You know, teacher, I don't believe there are such and such clouds." To which the teacher said, "Well, I mean, they're there, we know that. Well, go out and look in the sky." And she said that the student turned to her with such curiosity, "Why would I go out and look at the sky? What's up there in the sky that I need to look at? Everything I need to know is down here." And then her comment, of course, these people have no contact with nature. What a story. And look at where we are today. Look at the artificial reality that we have created, the virtual realities, where in which we have disconnected ourselves from other human beings. We have disconnected ourselves from the natural world. We like to just exist into our little private little domains, put on our televisions or our stereos or our computers, and get lost in the nice comforting air conditioning with nice sweet relaxing intoxicating foods and beverages. We disconnect from reality and go into a bubble of illusion in the mind. This is the most dangerous prison of them all, because it is one that is not only self-imposed, but one that is not recognized or perceived. It is truly a matrix. Now, understand that the way out is to look around you at the patterns below, which will indeed reflect the patterns above. Moving right along. You know, I'm going to skip this last section of letter Vav because I want to get into this letter Zion. Like I told you, I really wanted to get all this done, so I feel like I have to do this. Feel. What a weird word, feel. This is a section called Kitrug Hayareach, or the accusations or challenge of the moon. It's an ancient legend that states that the sun and the moon were created equally, shining equal light before God. Okay? And that the moon came before God and said, you know, you can't have two kings that use the same crown. Meaning, how can you have two which are equal? To which God says, you're right. Go and make yourself less. Now, forget all the morals and ethics here. Understand that this is a secret of the relationship of the dual world, of that which we call Sura and Homer. Form and force. They're not a 50-50 equal split. That's the secret here. Hakol ba'am mishal ledibrei razal k'dei lastir enyan. All of this is coming in a symbolic way so things can be concealed. She'ein lamala lo sina lo kina v'lo taharut. Don't think that there's any kind of jealousy or anger or hatred above. Come on, that's all ridiculous. What does it mean when it says you can't have two kings that rule the same crown? Meaning, you can't have two levels which are equal exactly with one another. One has to be separated from the other. They have to be in a relationship of giving and receiving, male and female, right and left. For those of you who know the Kabbalah system of the Ari, we call it Ma and Ben. In the Oriental tradition, oh, I know, I'm going to get all you angry at me now. They called it Yin and Yang. Now, it's not an idolatrous symbol. It's not a false god. It's a philosophical construct, but if you understand it properly, it's reflecting what our Torah teaches. Kind of makes me wonder if that might have actually came from a Torah source. But that's something else. Not for here or there. My point with this is, we are in the, if you will, lower realm called the moon. And therefore, when we contemplate the moon, we can experience the light of the sun. We know from natural law that the moon has no light of its own, reflects the light of the sun. By contemplating the moon and seeing in the light of the moon, you can see the shadow world around. And from that, see forms and images that when you penetrate beyond the shadows, the sunlight will start to penetrate. Have any of you ever gone out into nature? No street lights, no city lights, completely under the full moon. Let me tell you something. Where I am out here, we have no city lights. We have no street lights. And when the full moon shines out here, boy, oh boy, I'll tell you, there have been times when literally I've looked out my windows at night and made the mistake of thinking that I might have left the porch light on because it's so light outside. Yes, go out and see the light of the moon in its full glory. Sit there in silent contemplation. There is no evil here. Unless, of course, you know, you got bears or coyotes running around like I might. Be silent. Experience like the children of the Nevi'im did. Somebody's asking a question, why Rabbi said you're not supposed to look at the moon? That's only when you're saying the blessing of the renewal of the moon, and they don't want you looking at the moon when you're thanking God for the process of the renewal of creation, for fear that you might think as if you are talking or blessing or worshiping the planet or the moon itself. That's why. But aside from that issue of Jewish ritual, contemplation, experience, as you do this, you will come to know the letters that make up the structure of the universe. This is the secret of the Tzirufim and the permutations of the Sefer Yetzirah. Nahazu le'inyan she'emarnu. Let's go back to discussion. The Aleph and the Bet and the Gimel. Aleph, as we said, is a reference to the level called the Tzura, the pure force. Hu olam elyon, the supernal world. For hu Sechel pashut. It is simple, pure mind. This is the domain of what we call the sefirot and the attributes. Hasheni, or habet, this is two things. The second world. This world of what we call the tzura and the homer, force and form. This is the world of the angels and the spheres, as we said. And they are, again, one above the other. And again, he says, Al titma al shemarnu. Don't be so surprised that we say, Shehamalachu homer, that an angel has form. Ki kol devar nivra homer hu. Everything created has a form, homer. Aval yesh hefresh mechomer lachomer. There's a difference between one type form and another. And that is what we must emphasize. Just because we say that malachim have a form, that doesn't mean that they are carbon-based life forms like we are. Now, I will tell you there are extraterrestrial entities, angels, who are flesh and blood humanoid like us. You heard me right. Genesis chapter 6. The sons of God who came down and took the human women, physical, flesh and blood type human beings. Where do I learn this from? Surprisingly, of all people, from the late Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik. May he rest in peace. He was the Rosh Hashiva of Brisk in Chicago, and is also the Rosh Hashiva of Yeshiva University after the passing of his brother. I remember reading, back in the 90s, when they thought they found life on Mars. They asked a number of rabbis what they thought about life in outer space. And to my surprise, they quoted Rav Aaron Soloveitchik as saying, yes, Genesis 6, humanoids came down, etc., just like I described. I couldn't believe it. I said, wait a second. This is one of the leading rabbis of the generation. He would say something as radical as this? It must be that the newspaper misquoted him. Well, I lived in Chicago in the day, and I knew Rav Soloveitchik, and I was good friends with his son, Rav Moshe, at the time. And I asked his son, who just happened to be a neighbor of mine, did you hear what they said in the name of your father? Don't you want to, you know, write a disclaimer or something? And he says, oh no, my father does hold like that. It's from a 9th century text from a Rabbi Yehuda. I never got his last name, and that's what it says. Well, there you go. So there are those who are truly of this opinion. When you look into the Bible, three angels came to Abraham. Two went to Sodom and Gomorrah. When Joseph is wandering in a field, he meets a man. Angels are always called men. Now, they can pop in and out, sometimes in a puff of smoke, but that didn't mean they were any less physical all the time than they were here. We're dealing with concepts and structures of reality that we don't yet understand within the concept of our modern physics. But let's not be so quick to dismiss races of beings which are a billion or maybe even 10 billion years ahead of us in development, technology, and drawing closer to God. You say, well, they're not humans. I don't know what they are, neither do you. So, let it be as that. He continues and says, if you find in the words of our sages that they say that the Shekhinah is something created, he says, don't listen. God forbid that's not true. It is something emanated. Alright? In the short time I'll have here, I'm going to digress and I'll explain. You all know the Ark of the Covenant. It says that the Holy Presence of God dwelt upon the Ark of the Covenant. What was that? Well, I will tell you this. If you were the high priest and you went into the temple and you saw what was on the Ark of the Covenant, you would have seen an energy type form of being that literally had a structure and a face, which I might add most likely was feminine and not masculine. Shekhinah is always called feminine. You want to know something? You remember Raiders of the Lost Ark, Steven Spielberg's movie? How, you know, Harrison Ford, Indiana Jones? In the last scene when they opened up the ark and they had this like angel entity coming out, it was a beautiful woman turning into the angel of death. Spielberg got that pretty accurately. He must have spoke to some rabbi to create that type of portrait. Because pretty much that's what the Shekhinah would have looked like, sitting upon the Ark of the Covenant. It was actual, tangible, real. It took that form. But that form is, if you will, like the tentacle, the vessel, the letter, the Homer of the Surah. Remember I said that Homer isn't always physical, but some type of visible. This force clearly was something electromagnetic in nature. Because anyone who got too close to the ark, as we learned with Aharon's sons, Nadav and Abihu, they were electrocuted. It says that the fire of God came out and burned them. And our sages reveal that it didn't burn them from the outside, meaning they didn't just poof up in flames, but it burned them. It went like two little strings up their nose and burnt them from the inside. That doesn't sound like electrocution. I don't know what does. And it's known that the Ark of the Covenant was very dangerous. People went around it. They died. What happens if you have electromagnetic fields? Go around an electromagnetic field and see what happens to you. Because everybody knows electromagnetism is somehow related to life. Defibrillator, the heart, I mean, you know, it all kind of fits together. Hint, hint. Yes. Chi energy, nefesh energy, orgone energy. Are you getting it yet? This is the secret of life. Life is the secret of consciousness. Developing one is developing the other. And that's the great secret. Passion, form, life. The secret of the letters of the Torah. The secret of the Shekhinah. The Shekhinah, though might not be physically materialized on the ark at this moment on this earth, probably an inner earth, yes, but not here. But, anyway, I see that I've ran out of time. So let me sum up and conclude. The power, the force, the energy is with us. You will find it in the natural order which God created, which we are a part of. Feel it. Know it. Experience it. When we talk in the Sefer Yetzirah about permutating the letters, this is how you do it. Don't just go, like I taught in the class, Aleph with Bet with Gimel, and told you, do it fast, till ultimately you go beyond it. Until you'll find your own structures, your own form, your own revelations, your own insights. And then you go beyond it. This is the secret. Please God, learn it well. Thank you all for joining me tonight. I'm your host again, Ariel Bar-Tzadok. You find me online, koshetorah.com. See you all, God be willing, in our next class. Shalom.